The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends, from South Africa to Australia, from Britain to the United States and around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. And some of the really best news you're going to hear about the world tomorrow is the news about the solution to the divorce problems of today. A world with no more divorce, with stable, warm, loving, secure families and homes. And remember that families and homes are the very basic building blocks of our societies today. But we in the Western world are today seeing divorce reaching nearly epidemic proportions. Divorce in the United States in particular is practically epidemic. But divorce has a cause, and the removal of that cause of broken homes and divorce will affect the solution in the world tomorrow. If you can begin to imagine a world of no more divorce. Now, to some people, this would be tantamount to sentencing them to jail, as I'm going to show you, by the reports of the attitudes of some people in a marriage from which they would like to escape today. But to prove the point that it's practically epidemic, do you know there are more than 1,000 divorce decrees a day in the United States? It's much higher than that now, because I believe that statistic goes back a couple of 3 years or more. But every time the clock ticks off 90 seconds, another American home is broken by divorce. It's not quite that bad in Britain or Australia, but it's bad enough. Must the victims of divorce, and isn't it always that way, the innocent bystander who seems to suffer, must the victims of divorce, the little children, lead bleak and insecure lives? Millions of little children who are denied the warmth and security of a loving home? Or is it possible to save these children, a future generation, from the mistakes of their parents? There is a cause for divorce, one great underlying cause, and many other causes and reasons for divorce today. So in a series of programs about one of the great laws, one of the great Ten Commandments, or rules for living, the seventh commandment of the great Ten Commandments of which you've heard, I'm going to take the time to point out many of the problems that are rife and rampant in the world today of what's happening to the marriages of people around the world and some of the causes of divorce, and then show you in these few programs I'm going to inject what some of the young people say about it, to give you what the marital counselors think about and members of the clergy and what parents say, to give you the voice of experience of people who have been married for many, many years, but also what the young people feel. And then to give you the practical, tangible knowledge from the foundation of all knowledge, which many people don't realize is the Bible. They don't realize that's the book on education, on right knowledge, on practical, workable, everyday, and useful knowledge about how to live a happy and an abundant life. And that it has a great deal to do with marriage. Now, the trouble with people's marriages today is the courtship that occurred before the marriage. It's because so many people don't seem to know what love is. As I was saying in the last program, people today believe that you fall in love. And there's a sort of a funny notion circulated around the Western world about romance and about falling in love. And I quoted how in a class on family living, a pert young girl got to her feet and said, "Well, what would my parents know about love? They've been married for 20 years. And how the teenage boy said, "Well, I know I love Margaret because if she doesn't go to the prom with me, I'll never speak to her again." Now, to show you what's happening to people in their ideas in approaching marriage, in their ideas about the selection of a mate in preparation for marriage, and this false notion about a sort of a glittering, glamorous, pink fluff cloud of Hollywood romance, let me illustrate the point by this rather bizarre quotation that rocked the Allegheny County Marriage License Bureau back on its heels when it received a letter from a man who had once been sufficiently head over heels in love with a girl that he'd been breathing sweet nothings in her ear. As a matter of fact, he had married her. But here was his question to the County Marriage License Bureau. "Gentlemen, I was married in Pittsburgh some years ago. I don't like to admit it, but I have forgotten the name of the woman I married. Would you kindly send the name to me?" So the Marriage License Bureau obliged, but it could hardly affirm that the love which sent some couples into marriage is precisely imperishable. Now, what is love? At one of the conferences of the British Marriage Society, they came out with a flat conclusion that there is no such thing as love at first sight. Now, I've said that for quite a while, but I base that on
some of the education that comes out of that book, which is the foundation of all education and all knowledge. This is the first moment that I had known that the British Marriage Society believed the same thing. I have to agree with that statement because that's a fact. You have to find what is the definition of love, and after all, marriages should be based upon love. But lamentably, I doubt very much if more than a very tiny percentage, is it 1%, is it even as much as 2% or 5% of all marriages are based on love, on the kind of love I'm talking about, real love. Now, don't make up your mind yet if you hadn't heard the definition of it. But the British marriage advisor said, call it love if you want to, any label you want to put on it, but it just isn't real. Now, that doesn't mean it isn't powerful. That doesn't mean it doesn't attract. The phenomenon of precipitate attraction is known as infatuation. And that was once described by George Bernard Shaw as the most violent, and he called it the most insane, the most delusive, and the most transient of all passions. Infatuation. Oh, can that ever send your brain reeling? The first time a little kid in the fifth grade has the girl wink at him. Or maybe she hits him with a spit wad and then passes him a note and says, I like you. And he walks out on the cloud, you know. The playground romances of today that parents and sometimes even teachers seem to encourage, and what's happening to us in the Western world as a result. Now, Webster says to infatuate is to inspire with a foolish and extravagant passion, to affect with folly, to weaken the intellectual powers of, or to deprive of sound judgment. And isn't that just about what's happening? You ask young girls what they think about young boys, and they'll say cool, or in, or groovy man, or like good-looking, or smooth dresser, or exciting. Good wage earner? Intelligent? Solid? Stable? Full of wisdom? Plenty of knowledge? Good provider? No. A matter of fact, a lot of them wouldn't know how to spell some of those words at the age at which they observe that the kid is good-looking. Now, let's find out just what is happening. It's been said by a painter, as a matter of fact, who was supposed to have gone to great depths of failure in his own private life, and he was a rather disillusioned person, and his paintings showed it. And like many people who reached fame in certain areas, or fortune, or money, in other words, his private life was anything but happy. The way he put it, Toulouse-Lautrec, you may have heard of him, he said, marriage is a dull meal with the dessert first. Now, any marriage based upon the sad notions of romance that the Western world has, or based upon infatuation, would probably be exactly that. As a matter of fact, I can prove that to you by these shocking statistics. The Daily Sketch in England came up with a shocking answer about why it was that many married couples would not marry the same mate again. It put the question to its readers about how many would marry the same person again. Now, I think the British people were amazed if they read this, that thousands of readers, with wives outnumbering the husbands, incidentally, 7-1, show that 4 out of 10 women and 3 out of 10 men wanted to swap partners. And that newspaper said it also appeared that the more children there were in a marriage, the more likely the wife disliked her husband. The length of marriages also figured in it, according to the sketch. 21 years was the average length of the marriages of all women who said they wanted to get rid of their present partners, and the danger age for women between ages of 49 and 56. And that's an unbelievable thing, isn't it? And I don't mean to insult anybody, but I mean by the time a woman is 49 and 56, she's not exactly middle-aged. And I'm not saying that she's elderly, but shall we say that she should now be a mature? But you know, a person is middle-aged at about 35. 36 is middle age. We don't like to admit that, but that's just about half the lifespan of the average person in the Western world today. And by the time a woman is 49 to 56, can you imagine a 55-year-old woman now? Of course, I suppose you can imagine it. Some people can imagine it, but they wanted to get married all over again. While for men, it was between the ages of 16 and 24. Now, the newspaper said it appeared that half the husbands between those ages would not marry their wives again. Isn't that amazing? You know, a Dr. William Hollister of Birmingham, Alabama, said something that deserves repeating. He says, you don't fall in love, you climb up to love. And that certainly is a fact. I was saying in the last program that love is an outgoing concern. that love desires to give. Love desires to serve the object of one's affections, to share, to give of oneself. That love is entirely outgoing, that love is selfless. But lust, infatuation, physical fleshly attraction, that's all incoming. That's all wanting to get and to grasp and to have and to take for yourself. And all too many marriages are based upon lust, based upon sheer infatuation, where the person does not know the other person. Now, a newspaper man once asked the late Dr. James Bossert, who for many years was the elder statesman of serious students of U.S. marriage, if he could explain in a nutshell, real quickly, why our divorce rate in the United States was so appallingly high. Real quickly, he said, the trouble with American marriage is American courtship. Now, that might have come as a shock to the newspaper man. And we're reconciled to the fact that as a nation, it's rapidly approaching practically every third home, meaning about every third young bride that trips gaily down the aisle with rice showering around her and jumps in the car and goes clattering off with the tin cans and shoes to her honeymoon, is within a certain indeterminate period of time going to walk right back down another aisle to a courtroom and seek to get that union broken by divorce. And of course, we're sort of reconciled to this. We're callous to it. It's part and parcel of our society. But is there any truth in what he said, that the trouble with American marriage, and with marriages for that matter in much of the Western world, is the courtship, what takes place prior to that marriage? Now, it ought to be rather obvious that once the marriage occurs, once the people have said the vows, once they are bound together by the state, and actually they're bound by a higher court than that few people recognize, that the bond has been tied, so to speak, they've been united. You know, people assume that it's something that happens later, that a series of very small, picky little things, such as squeezing toothpaste tubes in the middle, or not putting socks in shoes, or leaving doors open, or burnt food, or whatever happens, that finally just mount up to become such a giant problem that the two people just can't stand each other. But you know, advertising people who have had to understand the temper of the times to survive know that you can get America's romantically inclined people to buy almost anything and everything that will make you smell better, that'll make you dangerous, make you irresistible, that'll make you a better prospect for wild romance. Now, there's one ad that I saw recently. Here's a man who gets on, and there was a great big article, as a matter of fact, in True Magazine recently. I saw a whole picture of all kinds of these bottles and things, and about all the new trend in American males. Maybe it's hitting Britain and Australia to a good extent, too, but here were all these bottles to make people smell better. And the idea that one little dab of a certain kind of hair dressing is going to make women just wild to get their hands in your hair. Well, here was this fellow that went striding past a good-looking stewardess on a big jet plane, and he was followed by a sort of an aura of an overpowering scent that apparently was quite dangerous because he'd used a particular kind of deodorant, or maybe aftershave, or whatever it was. The stewardess promptly got this evil, calculating look in her eye. She slammed the door of the airliner, left all the other people on the steps waiting and clamoring to get inside, signaled the pilot to take off, and the next view is, here you see this big empty airliner with just the stewardess and this one guy with his aftershave lotion on, hurtling off into the air, and then you're supposed to wonder what's happening. Now that pretty much expresses what's happening in advertising. It's amazing. And look at music. People grow up assured from all sides that there is a special mate that, listen to these song titles, fate had them created for. They're sure that someday he'll come along, some enchanted evening. You'll see her across a crowded room. And when it happens, everybody agrees that you will know at a glance. You ever heard that before? One look and your heart grows tipsy in you. And icy fingers running up and down my spine because of that old black magic that somebody has. Or if you were a bell, you'd start ringing. Or you ask, what is this thing called love? Just what is it? And the songwriter answers, it's just too marvelous for words. Or they say that falling in love is wonderful. And songs of this nature. Now, for years, of course, people who have considered marriage and the family to be humanity's most important and sacred institution, people who have seriously thought of the home as the building block of society and the very bulwark that is going to preserve our entire heritage and our Western culture, have felt that marriage, therefore, deserves the most earnest contemplation, serious preparation, and oftentimes even said it deserves
serious, studious thought and prayer. And the very thought or idea of attempting to snare a husband with a lotion or a perfume, or to snare a wife with a hair oil or a deodorant, is absolutely repugnant to someone who thinks in marriage in those terms. Now, should someone approach marriage in those terms? Is that right or good? Well, let's let the voice of experience answer for it. It's been proved that the more useful the couple happen to be when they become married, the less their chances for success. The less they know about each other before marriage, the less their chances for success. The more flimsy their reasons for getting married, and the fewer the common interests, the less their chance for success. But we like to become infatuated, and we like to see people running around and dating, and that's a rather new thing, by the way. I'm going to comment on that a little bit. And it's a rather incongruous statement that here is a parent that might not even remotely yet consider their child is old enough to drive the automobile. Yet he says, Daddy, I've got a date with so-and-so. And he says, okay, fine, because we assume that the schools are going to take care of all of this. And there's a sort of a subculture or society that is away from the home where children can have free concourse and intermingling and mixing with children of opposite sex and of near age. And so it dances on street corners, and in the malt shop, the children freely circulate around and among and between each other. It's like one old marital counselor said years ago. He was rather old-fashioned about it. He thought marriage was permanent, and he thought marriage was pretty serious. And he figured one of the most villainous men in all of history was some anonymous person who lived several generations ago. That was the first American father, who, when he was asked by a young man for permission to take his daughter out for the evening, replied yes, without bothering to look up or to see who was speaking. And that deserves a little bit of thought, too. Now, many of that man's colleagues felt that his views might have been a little bit over-pessimistic, but they all conceded that he certainly had a point. It's generally believed in the United States to be a law of nature that young men and women should have full rein to meet in school or on street corners or in malt shops, and that they should pair off in unchaperoned dates and fall in love, and that surely the unmistakable feeling of that icy finger up and down your spine, or this wonderful whatever it is that people have been frantically trying to describe in 100,000 different directions since the time of the advent of public entertainment, that the moment they feel this, they ought to rush to the altar with the object of their affections as soon as possible, with or without parental approval. And the idea of liberty in the Western world means that Dad and Mom aren't going to tell me who to date and when to get in. And so more and more we see marriages falling apart and people begin to wonder why. You know, going back in history, it wasn't always that way. Our practices of dating, and especially the practices of going steady, and all of the practices of the processes by which mates are selected, if you can call it that, in the Western world, are very, very new. Now, does that prove that they're wrong? No, but it does prove that they are new. It is very new. And like any other new innovation, just because it is new, doesn't mean that it necessarily represents progress in the right direction. Now, it may have some disadvantages. It may have other blessings. But I'd like to point out that in many countries of the world today, it still is not done that way. Does that prove anything? No, except when you compare the divorce statistics. Does it do anything? Now, not all people are going to agree with me that divorce is wrong. But, of course, I'm not going to change anybody's opinion if he just wants to believe that and isn't willing to look at it with an open mind anyhow. And I'm not going to convince anybody who isn't willing to research for himself and find out what is the foundation of right knowledge to ask himself whether or not marriage was designed or whether it's an evolutionary accident. To ask himself whether or not there are laws that regulate marriage and that would bring about, if they are obeyed, a happy marriage. You know, J. Paul Getty said he'd give all of his millions to have just one happy marriage. And I believe he meant what he said. And I believe that many of these people who say they would like to marry somebody else or they're sad to be with this mate wish that it could have been different. All they're saying is they wish they had married the right one in the first place. They're not saying it was right that they married the wrong one. And it could be they have married the right one and just need to get used to it. But it's about time we ask ourselves those questions and then demanded an answer. Is marriage designed? Was marriage planned?
Or is marriage a natural sociological sort of an outgrowth of an evolutionary process of dynamic change in races and among peoples and cultures as mankind goes along this happy journey toward oblivion, if that's where we're headed? And that's what some of the philosophers seem to tell us today. Now, Governor Romney once said that this new morality, this new swing toward immorality, is one of the greatest problems that we face in the Western world, especially in the United States. And many politicians, even theologians and philosophers, especially educators, see what is happening among our youth and in the breakdown of the home and the increasing immorality in the world as one of the really deep sociological problems of today and one of the greatest challenges to the continuance of our free society. They really do. For example, would you say that alcoholism or drug addiction or maybe taking trips on LSD is the number one health problem among our teenagers today? It's not. Do you know what the number one health problem is in the teenage group in the United States? It's pregnancy. That's a fact. Premarital pregnancy among teenagers, you know, out of wedlock, is absolutely becoming the greatest health problem among youth, if you can call it a health problem, and it certainly is, because many of them are seeking abortions and sometimes with disastrous results. Now, it then follows, logically, that venereal disease would have to be ranked about number two. And it's an amazing vicious cycle we're on, because a Dr. Philip Sorrell, who is a resident gynecologist at the Yale New Haven Hospital, recently reported that an out-of-wedlock pregnancy in the young teenager may signal the beginning of a cycle which consists of this. First of all, failure to continue education, and then dependence on a state welfare system, and then probably never marrying because of frustrations and disillusionment, and maybe even in that status continuing to reproduce illegitimate offspring, and every last one of them being denied the sanctity and the protection of a warm and loving home. Now, the implications of such a cycle to all of society are rather disastrous if you're willing to give it a good long look. For instance, a survey of 100 teenage unwed mothers who were studied in Connecticut from their first pregnancies in 1959 to date, 95 out of the 100 continued until they had up to 5 illegitimate children each. Out of those 100 teenage unwed mothers, only 9 were married, and out of the 100, 60 of them were living on welfare. Now, those are rather shocking statistics, but they're factual and they're true. And they deserve to be thought about and heeded. What is happening to us in the Western world that we believe that a young girl should be allowed to freely date with whomever she meets, and that we feel and we have the preoccupation with personal rights and civil liberties and all of this, that we actually go one step further and just might as well say we believe in civil disobedience, that we believe in teenage rejection of all parental controls and principles, that we believe in students freely and without, absolutely without any restraint whatsoever, enjoying or indulging in every kind of immorality imaginable, and how college students are beginning to openly advocate and even draw up petitions that their university governments would allow them to have what goes on in the dormitories absolutely kept out of the policies or any of the jurisdiction of the administration of the educational institution, that their private lives ought to be absolutely their own. We're on a sort of a swing of the pendulum today, and it's really doing something pretty terrible to us, and a lot of innocent people are having to suffer. And it's about time we began to investigate and ask ourselves, is our practice today of dating, of going steady, the practices used by many youths today in the selection of a mate, are they really paying off? Is it right? Is it producing the right results? Is it good? Are the fruits of it good? And if so, can we prove it? Can we point out that marriages based upon those notions are really successful and happy? And can we find out whether or not there is anything really rewarding in it, and that the marriages are happy? So I'm going to give you, in a series of a couple of three programs here, rather injecting it into this series of broadcasts on the Ten Commandments, I've come to the seventh commandment that says, thou shalt not commit adultery. Members of the clergy don't agree with that law of God. Some of them have said, I can't tell my parishioners they shouldn't commit adultery. Others have openly advocated that they do. Some have said it's absolutely good for a marriage and that it may save a marriage to have extramarital experience. Still others are claiming that premarital experience is good preparation for marriage. All kinds of rather sordid ideas today, and those ideas have a background. They come from a certain source, ancient philosophers, and from human nature itself, of course. So I'm going to state the problems, show you what young people say about it, let you hear from marital counselors, members of the clergy, or what parents say. Let you hear from the voice of experience of what the statistics prove and just what is the current trend. And then show you what are the laws that regulate marriage. And in a couple of programs, I'm going to give you the practical, tangible, workable, direct knowledge about how to select a mate. How should you, if you're not married, go about selecting a mate? And does it make sense? Is it something that is good for you? Is it good advice, or is it just so much lofty principle that isn't workable? Well, you'll have to evaluate that for yourself when you hear it. So listen to the next couple of three programs very carefully, because I'm going to tell you exactly what the methods of selecting a mate ought to be, and show you what's wrong with the catch-as-catch-can accidental methods that are being used today. And in the meantime, you need to write for these articles that we have for you on the subject. Many of you people listening to me right now have either been divorced or some of you are about to be. Now, before you do another thing, at least give it one last little remote chance, will you? You've lived with this person for a long time. You've been through every imaginable difficulty. You've shared some pretty happy moments together, undoubtedly. Maybe you've had a few spats and fights, too. But before you give up something that has occupied that major share of your life quite so quickly, at least you owe it to yourself to write in for these absolutely free articles on how to have a happy marriage and the one on how to solve family arguments. How to solve family arguments. How to get rid of some of your antagonisms between you and your mate. How to be a better husband or a better wife, and it's the shortest road to happiness for yourself. Now, maybe some of you are to the point you're so mad at somebody else, maybe it's your own spouse, that you really just don't want to give it a chance. Well, if you don't want to give her a chance or him a chance, at least give yourself a chance, and I think that should appeal to you. So write for the article on it anyhow. Give yourself a chance for some additional happiness out of life, and write for the article on the plain truth about child-rearing, the booklet on it that shows how marriages should be established. And this one on how to solve family arguments, the article on how to have a happy marriage. They are free of charge. There's no price. And I'm not trying to get you to join some discussion group or a club, and nobody's going to call on you. Your name is kept anonymously in our files, not given to someone else. No one's going to send you a bill, and there is no request for money and no blank checks that come. How to have a happy marriage, how to solve family arguments, and the one on the plain truth about child rearing. Very valuable booklets, but absolutely free of charge. Now, in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, 52 pages, full color throughout, this article on President Johnson's visit to Australia, the real purpose of it, what it accomplished, the Iron Curtain gathers rust. Report from behind the Iron Curtain. Interviews with people in business, government, professional people, as well as the men on the street there. And the big changes taking place in Europe today. The article on a four-eyed look at evolution. Some of the amazing creatures and how can evolution explain them. Seven keys to mental mastery. Other articles in the current number of The Plain Truth. If you send your name and address to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Remember the articles I've announced on how to have a happy marriage and how to solve family arguments. They're free of charge, no price. The address again in just a moment. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.